And that was President Trump speaking at a Turning Point USA event in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome to NTD Evening News. Our top story tonight, President Trump announcing the Strait of Hormuz is completely open and it's ready for business. What the president has to say about the status of Iran talks and the timing of the U.S. blockade on Iranian ports. Mariotsu at the White House. Oil prices drop as Iran reopens the Strait of Hormuz. Commerce Secretary Lutnick gives an optimistic view of U.S. economic growth. Jack Bradley reports.
This is NTD Evening News, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. President Trump announcing the Hormuz Strait is fully opened and ready for full passage. This comes on day five of the U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports, meant to financially squeeze the regime into negotiations. We now go live to NTD's White House correspondent Mari Otsu at the North Lawn. Mari, good evening.
Hey, Carrie, good evening to you. That's right, and President Trump today is calling it a great and brilliant day for the world as he announces the complete and full opening of the Strait of Hormuz. Take a look.
Because Iran has just announced that the Strait of Hormuz is fully open and ready for business and full passage. But the naval blockade will remain in full force and effect as it pertains to Iran until such time as our transaction with Iran is 100% complete and fully signed.
And President Trump says that the deal process should go, quote, very quickly, and that most of the negotiations are already agreed to. And the White House says that President Trump now has maximum leverage over Iran as a possible deal nears. President Trump today also says that talks are currently ongoing and that he doesn't think that there are too many significant differences, and that when the agreement is signed, that's when the U.S. Blockade of Iranian ports will end. Take a look.
So we're having a big day. We'll see how it all turns out, but it should be good. We've had some very good discussions. Talks are going on. It'll go on over the weekend, and a lot of good things are happening. And that includes Lebanon, too.
The president adding that in addition to opening the strait, quote, Iran has agreed to never close the Strait of Hormuz again. It will no longer be used as a weapon against the world. He also says the U.S. will get all nuclear dust from Tehran without sending any money to the Iranian regime. He's telling Reuters that the U.S. is going to go in with Iran at a, quote, leisurely pace and go down and start excavating with big machinery to bring the enriched uranium back to the U.S.
We have a statement, very powerful statement, that they will not have beyond 20 years. That they will not have nuclear weapons. They've agreed to give us back the nuclear dust that's way underground because of the attack we made with the B-2 bombers. So
this comes as President Trump says Iran, with the help of the U.S., has removed or is removing all sea mines, a step that could expand commercial shipping traffic through the vital waterway. Meanwhile, a day after announcing that 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon, which includes Hezbollah, President Trump is clarifying, quote, this deal is in no way subject to Lebanon either, but the USA will separately work with Lebanon and deal with the Hezbollah situation in an appropriate manner. Israel will not be bombing Lebanon any longer. They are prohibited from doing so by the U.S. Enough is enough.
They're all agreeing it's a very nice little package for about a week, and we're not going to have lots of bombs dropping, and we're going to see if we can make peace between Lebanon and Israel. They're going to be having a ceasefire, and that'll include Hezbollah, and I think it could be number 10 for me.
Meanwhile, while President Trump is praising the UAE, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia for their support during Operation Epic Fury, in the same breath, he's criticizing NATO as a paper tiger, saying that he received a call from the alliance asking them if the U.S. needs help after the strait opened today. And he says that they were useless, though, when they were needed and told them to stay away. Carrie, back to you.
Thanks for that update, Mari. The American blockade on Iranian ports is still in effect. The U.S. military today showing exactly how the blockade works. NTD's international correspondent Arian Pazdar has the latest on U.S. operations in the Persian Gulf.
The U.S. military on Friday releasing a video showing the enforcement of the American naval blockade against Iran. President Trump and the Iranian regime announcing that Iran is officially lifting its blockade in the Strait of Hormuz. But the American blockade will stay in place. The U.S. blockade only applies to ships heading to or from Iranian ports, meaning ships can still pass if they're traveling to or from other Gulf nations. U.S. Central Command saying 19 ships have returned so far at direction of the U.S. Navy. Here's a video showing how the enforcement and communication take place.
Blue Sky 4, this is U.S. Navy Warship 115. Request you return to original port of call in Iran. How copy? Over.
Copy, sir. Thank you very much. Copy, sir. Me alter to Iran. Thank you.
Blue Sky 4, this is U.S. Warship 115. I understand you will return to your previous port of call in Iran. This is U.S. Warship 115, standing by on channel 16. Out.
Data by tracking service Marine Traffic shows a cruise ship transiting the Strait of Hormuz, making it the first passenger vessel to get through. The Malta-flagged cruise ship Celestial Discovery had been docked in Dubai for 47 days. And a Malta-flagged tanker anchoring off Iraq's southern oil terminals on Friday. The vessel is set to load up to 2 million barrels of oil after passing through the Strait of Hormuz earlier this week.
We need to make sure that that is both lasting and a workable proposal.
British Prime Minister Keir Starmer saying he welcomes the announcement of the Strait's reopening.
We agreed to accelerate our military planning. I can confirm that along with France, the UK will lead a multinational mission to protect freedom of navigation as soon as conditions allow.
The reopening of the Strait of Hormuz comes on the heels of a US-brokered ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying, at the request of my friend President Trump, we have agreed to a temporary ceasefire in Lebanon. Netanyahu also making clear that Israel is not done with combating Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon, but is giving an opportunity to promote an integrated political and military solution. Arian Pastar, NTD News.
And as we just heard, the Strait of Hormuz is open again and oil prices are dropping sharply. Now, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick is signaling potential shifts in U.S. trade policy from North America to China, which could reshape the broader economic outlook. NTD's Washington correspondent Jack Bradley brings us more.
With Iran announcing the Strait of Hormuz is now fully open, the price of oil is dropping. On Friday morning, oil prices fell around 10% from around $98 to $86 a barrel.
Straits of Hormuz were just announced an hour ago that they're open and ships are moving. So the price of oil dropped 10%. This morning,
Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick at the Semaphore World Economy Summit in Washington remains optimistic that the U.S. GDP will grow 6% under President Trump, which is nearly $2 trillion.
We're used to terrorism being part of our society, and the concept of breaking terrorism is a unique concept that hasn't really been driven into the risk premium of the world.
Lutnick also says that President Trump is unhappy with the current U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement.
I think he thinks it's a bad deal.
The U.S. is due to renew or change the agreement in July, but as it now stands, Lutnick says that it's a negative for U.S. manufacturing.
The concept of taking an auto plant out of Ohio and Michigan and putting it in Mexico to break the union and to break our people is nuts.
Lutnick also says Canada has an unfair trade imbalance with the U.S.
Former top Canadian trade negotiator said the other day, you guys are in political trouble. The longer they wait, the better a deal you're going to have to do.
Good for them. That is like the worst strategy I've ever heard.
While Canada makes new deals with China, Prime Minister Mark Carney has eased Canada's ban on Chinese-made electric vehicles. The move sparked widespread criticism from Canadian automakers and lawmakers, warning it threatens Canadian jobs.
We are a $30 trillion economy, right? We are the consumer of the world, okay? Carney has a problem with us. He gets on a plane and he goes to China. Does he think the Chinese economy is going to buy his stuff? China is entirely an export-driven economy, right? So what did he do? He came back and said, oh, we'll take their electric cars.
When asked if Chinese automakers like BYD are going to be building factories in the U.S., Lutnick responded simply,
no.
As the Strait of Hormuz remains open and oil prices fall, the bigger question now is whether this moment is just short-term relief or the start of lasting change. For NTD News Washington, I'm Jack Bradley.
In a late-night standoff in the House over a key national security surveillance program nearly results in its expiration. Lawmakers ultimately approving a short-term extension of FISA just hours before the deadline. NTD's Chris Bob has more on that.
We're very close tonight. There's some nuances with the language and some questions need to be answered, and we'll get it done. The extension allows us the time to do that.
That was Speaker Mike Johnson around 3 o'clock in the morning Friday after the House approved a short-term extension of Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, pushing the deadline to April 30th and avoiding a lapse that was set for Monday. The late-night vote coming after the dramatic collapse of a longer-term deal. An effort to pass a five-year extension of the surveillance authority failed on the House floor just before 1:30 in the morning after more than a dozen Republicans broke with leadership and joined Democrats to vote it down. Lawmakers also rejected an 18-month extension, leaving leadership to turn to a temporary fix to keep the program in place. Section 702, first enacted in 2008, allows U.S. intelligence agencies to collect communications of foreign targets overseas. And it's widely viewed by national security officials as a critical tool for tracking terrorism, espionage, and other threats. But divisions remain over how to handle Americans' data that could be incidentally collected. Among those opposing the earlier proposals, Congressman Thomas Massie posting overnight that lawmakers blocked what he called two bad versions of the FISA bill, arguing they would have allowed unconstitutional surveillance of Americans, and frustration over the process spilling into public view. Asked whether the bill would pass Thursday, Congressman Tim Burchett was blunt.
No, heck no. No, there's too much. I don't think the rule even passes today.
Burchett also warning against what he described as last-minute legislating up against a deadline.
That's the way we always do it. They always delay, 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 doesn't matter who's in power, and then run us up against the wall. That's why terrible legislation happens. I think we go a little slower, we get there a little faster.
The Senate moved quickly Friday, approving the extension by voice vote and sending it to President Trump's desk, ensuring the authority remains active through the end of the month while negotiations continue. At the center of those talks, whether to require warrants before searching Americans' data. In a rare bipartisan op-ed in the New York Times, Senators Mike Lee and Dick Durbin proposing a compromise plan to preserve the core of the surveillance program, writing it would require the government to, quote, get court approval in the small number of cases in which these searches have generated results and the government has a proper basis for gaining access to the contents of the communications. They went on to say, our warrant requirement also contains robust exceptions for legitimate emergencies so that we can balance civil liberties with legitimate security needs. Supporters say the program remains one of the government's most important tools for identifying threats and keeping Americans safe.
FISA is a critical national security tool. It's also a very complicated piece of legislation. And what we're trying to do is thread the needle of ensuring that we have this essential tool to keep Americans safe, but also safeguard our constitutional rights and making sure that the abuses of FISA in the past are no longer possible.
With the April 30th deadline in place, lawmakers now have just under 2 weeks to reach a longer-term agreement before the surveillance authority once again faces expiration. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Chris Bob, NTD News.
And up ahead, California Democratic state lawmakers are advancing a bill about online posts. Independent journalist Nick Shirley says he's worried that journalism will be stifled. David Lamb brings us more. Welcome back to NTD Evening News. I'm Kerry Dunst. Democrats in California's State Assembly are advancing a new bill on online reporting. This comes as independent journalist Nick Shirley has been documenting alleged fraud in the state. He says investigative reporting will take a hit if the bill becomes law. NTD's David Lamb reports.
Lawmakers and citizens in California are talking about proposed legislation on free speech and harassment, a bill some are calling controversial. On Thursday, Republican California State Assembly member Carl DeMaio criticized colleagues for voting down his motion to drop AB 2624, which some are calling the Stop Nick Shirley Act, after Shirley's videos documenting alleged fraud in government-funded programs went viral. Shirley defended his position in a Fox News interview.
They're trying to make it so citizen journalists or just average Americans who are going about seeing what's happening inside their community, they're trying to scare them from talking about potential fraud taking place inside of these communities.
The bill was introduced in February, titled as the Privacy for Immigration Support Services Providers, authored by State Assemblymember Mia Bonta. She argues that the bill does not infringe on the First Amendment or journalism.
And my bill and the Safe at Home program defines this as sharing personal information with the intent to incite imminent great bodily harm or place someone in objectively reasonable fear for their personal safety. AB 2624 extends this existing tool to immigrant service providers, shielding them from having their personal information publicly exposed and giving them real legal tools to prevent and respond to targeted harassment.
The bill states that violators could face a minimum $4,000 penalty, but some California residents say there is a line between investigative journalism and harassment.
I think it just depends the context, again, like respecting people's boundaries, but it really has to do with the scenario and how far, it's more like common sense, like how far should you be willing to go.
And for me, I think if someone say no, but you keep on like pestering them and putting pressure on them, I think that would become like harassment. But if you like respect their response when they say yes, then you do it. If they say no, then you just walk away. I think that's okay.
If it's a crime, then it's more serious. If you think people are there and then you feel like it's there's a need to ask them the questions, yeah. If the person doesn't give you any permission and you film them and you post online, you know, that's invasion of privacy. Not sure how big the fine is, but I think there is something to be done about it.
I think for me, I would be okay for like a reporter to interview me, but if someone's just doing that for like, no attention online, then I wouldn't want to be, you know, posted online.
I don't think the government should have a say on our choice when it comes to freedom of speech, and they shouldn't be censoring what is the truth sometimes, and I think they do it to protect themselves when they're doing illegal activity.
The legislation is being referred to the California Assembly Committee on Public Safety. David Lamb, NTD News, California.
And California's gubernatorial race is heating up with candidates rolling out bold new policy proposals. Billionaire Tom Steyer is now calling for the state to investigate, prosecute, and potentially jail federal ICE agents who violate California law. NTD's Christina Corona has more from Southern California, where residents are reacting to the controversial plan.
With the California governor's race quickly approaching, candidates are now putting forward policy proposals, including one involving jailing ICE agents. We spoke to several residents to hear their thoughts on Tom Steyer's plan.
If Trump's ICE agents break the law, we'll prosecute them, just like anyone else. And if their leaders direct them to break the law, we'll prosecute them too.
In a recent blog post, millionaire California gubernatorial candidate Tom Steyer says the state could use existing laws to investigate and prosecute federal immigration agents who break the law. His plan includes strengthening protections against racial profiling, creating a task force to investigate detention centers, and expanding legal support for immigrants. But the idea is getting pushback. Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen told Fox News.
He doesn't understand ICE's role. He says they're criminal from top to bottom. ICE is enforcing the laws that Congress passed. That means that the Democrats that represent California in the federal government, if they wanted to change ICE's authority, they could do it.
Residents had mixed reactions.
They're way out of hand. If they're so brave and so full of themselves, why don't they take the mask off and the glasses and everything and show their face?
No, ICE agents are doing their job. It's someone that's doing their job. You can't hate someone for doing their job and doing what they're told. That's ridiculous to me. So for him to say that, and I did see a commercial on that, and I turn it every time it comes on TV, because it just makes me sick to my stomach that people are treating our people who protect us.
As the race continues, mail-in ballots are expected to go out in early May.
Reporting from the city of Glendora, Christina Corona, NTD News.
And earlier this week, President Trump announcing a plan to build a massive triumphal arch in the nation's capital. That's to commemorate America's 250th birthday. And prior to this, the president signed an executive order promoting traditional architecture rather than the modern brutalist style for federal government buildings. Are everyday Americans in favor of these moves? Well, NTD's Sam Wong was out on the National Mall in D.C. to hear from the people.
So the modern style brutalist architecture versus the traditional Greco-Roman style, which one do you prefer? Which one do you think brings more value to the city?
The old school Greco-Roman, it's just more visually appealing.
There's actually a symbolism to it that just looks like a boring old office building. I'd much rather visit that than an office building.
I like this one better. I mean, it tells you everything. It's been there, lets you know everything about what's been going on and stuff. So it's American history. That's what it is.
The Greco-Roman. I think that the roots of our culture is based on the architectural of the that informed civilization. You know, the brutalist form kind of came later out of the Bauhaus movement and that kind of influence that really took architecture and dumbed it down.
What do you think about President Trump's idea to build a triumphal arch in D.C., basically to celebrate America 250?
I love all the 250 stuff that's you see around the nation's capital. It's great. I'm okay with it, again, depending on the cost.
I think he's very smart and he knows what he's doing when it comes to building things. So he's got a lot of foresight.
We've been oppressed by the British, yet we fought for freedom because it's a basic human right. We have fought civil wars over freedom, and people will say to you, you can't have that arch there because he's a Nazi. He's not a Nazi. I think he's a great man. We absolutely deserve that arch more than anybody.
I think he's trying to create a sense of unity with it. I think he's trying to build a bridge back to where we were. So I think we've moved away from that. So
these reference points that the new arch that's being proposed is taken from the great Renaissance period and the very finest that Europe had to offer. It's telling. I remember the second 200 anniversary and what that meant to people. I was a kid. But this is something that I think, given where we're at in the world and the state of the world in general, I think is a true statement to this country and for our roots and what we stand for today.
And coming up in the NBA, we're down to a doubleheader tonight to decide the league's last two playoff spots. Dave Martin joins us with all the details. Now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin. Dave, we got some NBA news, of course, the playoffs. Before that, I want to talk about the World Cup and my home state, the Garden State. What's going on? Officials have announced some sky-high prices for those who want to go and commute to the event. What's happening?
Well, you know, I think they figure if you're willing to spend thousands of dollars on a World Cup ticket to begin with, why not 150 more just to get there, you know?
This is just a little toll along the way, right? Like Garden State Parkway.
Yeah, it's like 10% of the ticket price probably, so who's really going to notice? Now, this is for trains going to New Jersey's MetLife Stadium from New York City. Will be charged a $150 for a round-trip ticket during the times around these matches. Now, compare that to the $12.90 you would normally pay for that trip. Now, meanwhile, New Jersey officials are saying they're only trying to recoup the $62 million cost of hosting the World Cup. Now, MetLife Stadium in New Jersey hosting 8 World Cup games, including the title game in July. Officials are expecting roughly 25 to 30,000 fans to come through Penn Station on each of those game days. And if you're thinking of just driving to the game and parking there and tailgating, think again, parking on site will not be available, so no tailgating or anything there. They're planning to use a parking lot for other purposes, fan experience, enhanced security, whatever else. You can, though, park across the street. That's at American Dream Mall. Of course, American Dream Mall has figured this out. They are charging $225 to park on game days. Oh, no. Now, Boston is announcing some similar prices, but no other cities seem to be having this issue. So you're going to get gouged twice here for going to these games. Or you could just, you know, sit back and watch on TV, go to a nice sports bar if you wanted to.
Not the best day to take the kids to the American Dream Mall, is it?
Not a good day to go anywhere near that, you know? You don't even want to go to Penn Station these days, I'll say that.
Everything's for sale. In my day, it was called Giant Stadium, but I digress. I want to get to the NBA. We got a doubleheader, right?
We got a doubleheader. Orlando will host Charlotte in the Eastern Conference. Golden State, meanwhile, plays at Phoenix in the Western Conference tonight to determine the final two spots in the playoffs. Here we go. If you remember, if you were a 7 or 8 seed in this play-in round, all you had to do was win the first game and you were in,
Or if you lose, you can win the second game and you can get in as the number 8 seed. If you were the 10 or the 9 seed, though, you had to win both games just to get the 8 seed. So here we are, Charlotte versus Orlando tonight, and then Golden State versus Phoenix. They get the Eastern Conference. You would get the 8 seed here and play Detroit. Winner of the Warriors Suns matchup will play the Thunder as the 8 seed in the Western Conference. Meanwhile, the playoffs finally then start tomorrow. We've got 4 series here tomorrow. Cavaliers versus Raptors, Rockets, Lakers, Nuggets, Timberwolves, and Hawks versus Cary's New York Knicks. I know I've kind of maligned you as a Warriors fan, but just on the record, he doesn't want to get in trouble with the Knicks. He's officially a Knicks fan, although you said you kind of like the Nuggets too, right?
I lived in Colorado, but I am a New Yorker. Gotta root for those Knickerbockers.
Fair enough.
Might be like 71, 72, maybe. We'll bring the championship back to New York.
Gotcha. He's still in Team New York, everyone. But you do respect Steph Curry. That's what I'm getting at.
Greatest shooter ever.
Greatest shooter ever. I agree.
Maybe in Larry Bird's day, if that was the game, maybe it would have been Larry Bird. But you got to respect Steph.
Certainly could have been. You know, they didn't shoot 10 a game per player back then, right?
Different game in those
Much
days.
Much different.
All right, Dave, thanks for joining.
Thank you, Curry.
And that is all the time we have for today's news. But for Around the Clock original coverage, you can always visit us at ntd.com. Even better, download our NTD app. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Cary Dunst. Good night.